West Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this on the line coming from Raleigh, North Carolina, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Hi, Dennis, how are you doing?
Hanging in there. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. Well, what are we going to talk about this afternoon?
Well, I thought, since I just had this brand new article up on newswithviews.com about Richard Armitage and the ISI, Pakistani Intelligence Agency, I might talk about that.
All right, fine. Well, certainly Richard Armitage is a very, very colorful character. He's about 6'5", 6'6", big hulk of a man, a naval graduate, academy graduate, a very, very close friend of Oliver North. He's been tied into the CIA and the dark side of government and those people who've been involved with drugs for a long time. So why don't you pick up the story?
Okay, and since you said what you just did, I thought I'd let you know I was having a nice chat today with our mutual friend Charlotte Izzerbeat, and she has a video which she says she's going to send me about just what you were talking about, Richard Armitage and connections with drug people and so forth. So I'm looking forward to getting that one.
All right, is this something she's put out? Is that old Bo Greitz film?
I think it's probably Bo Greitz's film.
Okay, fine.
Richard Armitage is not known probably to many people, the average citizen, and on November 17th recently he announced that he would be leaving the job of Deputy Secretary of State. That's number two at the State Department, sort of like Strobe Talbott was under Warren Christopher under the Clinton administration. In this case, Richard Armitage would be second to a Colin Powell. And he said he's leaving that job. It's not really clear. I talked to the New York Times guy who wrote the story, and he said, no, it's not real clear where he's going, but he may be going back to his Armitage associates that he had prior to coming on board this time. And he is, as you said, an important power player in international affairs, and his activities have been a lot of influence. He, as you indicated, he's been with the CIA for a long time, as well as the Defense Intelligence Agency. And what I'm picking up on here primarily is that he holds the highest Pakistani civil decoration that any foreigner can receive. And he has many friends in Pakistan's intelligence agency, which is called the ISI, which stands for Inter-Services Intelligence. And right now your listeners are probably saying, oh, you know, so what? Pakistan, who cares?
Well, they really ought to care, because the ISI is sort of an extension of the CIA, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And people, they may ask why an American official would become so involved with Pakistan. You know, why Pakistan? For one thing, most of the CIA's covert operations in that part of the world, in South Asia, are actually run through the ISI. They facilitate whatever the CIA wants to do over in that area. And, of course, secondarily, Pakistan's geopolitically important in obtaining the oil from the Caspian region, which is where Kazakhstan is located. It's just north of Pakistan. And Armitage has had many clients in his Armitage associates. His clients have included Halliburton, which would be Dick Cheney's old firm. Dick Cheney was CEO of Halliburton's Brown and Root division, as well as Boeing and Goldman Sachs and Chase Manhattan and so on. And Armitage, as well as Dick Cheney in the 1990s, they both had business and consulting interest in the Caspian region. And Cheney's been CEO of Halliburton and on the Kazakhstan Oil Advisory Board.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Ketty. We're talking about Richard Armitage, who, of course, most people don't know who he is, but he's one of the major characters, one of the major players, working behind the scenes with the power elite that rules the world. And Richard Armitage is a giant of a man, probably 6'6", somewhere there, 6'5", 6'6", a graduate of the Naval Academy, a close friend of Oliver North, all of whom are players in this whole power structure that rules the world. And Richard Armitage has been the number two man at the State Department. He's been the acting Deputy Secretary of State. He's leaving his position there in the State Department. He's very, very close to the Pakistani and the Pakistani ISI, which is the Pakistani counterpart of the American CIA. But the point that Dennis is making is that certainly the ISI was instrumental in organizing the Taliban. The ISI was very, very friendly with Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and at least it has been suggested by a number of articles in newspapers from that area that shortly before the 9/11 attack, General Ahmad, I believe I'm pronouncing that right. Well, I'm going to let you tell the story. Go ahead there, Dennis.
Okay. Not only has, as we were talking before the break, the Armitage had CIA involvement, been working for them for many years, but there's always usually some sort of money angle to these things, too. And he and Dick Cheney have been heavily into the oil and gas industry in that part of the world. Dick Cheney, not only CEO of Halliburton, but on the Kazakhstan Oil Advisory Board. And in 1997, during the Clinton years, Armitage was contacted by the oil and gas giant called Unocal to work on its Central Asia pipeline interest. And he also, a few years later, of course, you know, with some money at stake there, co-authored the July 2000 report for the Commission on America's National Interest, which said, you know, we really need to get that oil out of the Caspian region. Of course, the problem was that recalcitrant Taliban group, the rulers of Afghanistan, who were really a product of the ISI, Pakistan's intelligence, they were standing in the way of meeting American demands for changing their structure, and to put it mildly, and thereby having a certain stability and allowing the pipeline to be built and oil and gas to flow down from the Caspian region through Pakistan and eventually to the U.S. and elsewhere and so on. But the reason I'm bringing this 1997 angle up is that just happened, or probably didn't just happen, to be the same year that Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is the first Director General of the Trilateral Commission, wrote his book, The Grand Chessboard.
Hold that thought for just a moment here, and we'll be right back. All right, Dr. Dennis Ketty is with us this afternoon, and we're talking about back 1957 when Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the man who organized the Trilateral Commission, and just incidentally, their logo is a three intertwining sixes. 666. But Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote a book in 1997 called The Grand Chessboard, which really laid out, it was the Mein Kampf of what was going to happen in the Middle East, talking about how we were going to have to control the oil of the Middle East, and oh, there'd be some Arabs would be unhappy about that, some terrorism, but we were going to have an incident, or at least a perceived direct external threat to get the American people to go along with this change in our whole philosophy, which of course was, although he didn't say as such, it was very obvious he was talking about bringing us into a war in the Middle East. So that was 1997, the book, The Grand Chessboard. Pick up the story there, David. Dennis?
Sure, and in this book, in case people don't think there are such things as elites, he several times refers to, quote, ruling national elites, quote, and describing the importance of the Caspian region to get that pipeline from there to the Arabian Sea via Afghanistan. And to pick up on what you were summarizing, he explained, this is a quote, quote, America is now Eurasia's arbiter. So this is not only including the Middle East, but Eurasia, you know, to the east and north as well from the Middle East. And he continues, how the United States both manipulates and manages Eurasia's key geopolitical pivots will be critical to the longevity and stability of America's global primacy. Now, he's going on, but I'm going to pause just a minute. when your average person reads that, they sort of gloss over, and you know, it's academy speak and all these high sounding terms. But when you stop and just think about that in its layman's terms for a minute, he's basically saying, we're going to go over there and we're going to manipulate a bunch of people to get our way and have power over that entire area. Now, when you grasp that attitude that these people have, you can see how, and I'm not excusing the Taliban, they're very ruthless people and so forth, but I mean, you can just think about if somebody wrote a book, The Grand Chessboard, and said, now, you know, we're going to go over to these United States and we're going to manipulate those people and grab their resources and so forth. I would imagine most Americans would say, you are, and they'd object to that. So here you have, in sort of diplomatic speak, very high-level tones, that's basically what Brzezinski's saying. And he goes on, he says, a possible challenge to American primacy from Islamic fundamentalism could be part of the problem in this unstable region and would be likely to express itself through diffuse violence. In other words, he's saying these religious people are going to object to what we're going to do over there, trying to manipulate them, and they're going to, all heck's going to break loose because of what we're doing. And so he continues in terms of American power. He says, quote, the pursuit of power is not a goal that commands popular passion, except in conditions of a sudden threat or challenge to the public sense of domestic well-being. America may find it more difficult to fashion a consensus on foreign policy issues, except in the circumstances of a truly massive and widely perceived direct external threat, end quote.
And I think that was so important. If we were to perceive it as a direct external threat, we didn't have to really be a direct external threat, but we would have to perceive it. And if we thought it was a direct external threat, then the people, the plebs here in the United States, could be mobilized to go along with this imperialistic program that he and the ruling elite have laid out. Would that be a fair statement?
Exactly, yes. That's a very fair statement. And so right after that quote in this article I did in newsreviews.com, picking up on what you said, I asked this question. You mean like a terrorist attack of 9/11 or the claim that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, question mark? And so there is only the need for the perception of a threat. Or, you know, if you have to have a threat, then you'll have a threat. And so what I do at this point is a digression. I'm going to pause for a minute in this sequence about Armitage and the ISI for this reason, because of what you said about the elite and their plans. These things don't just pop up. Somebody isn't sitting around in 1997, you know, Brzezinski and Armitage around some table somewhere and say, gee, I wonder what we can do next. So at this point, I would back up to 1952 briefly. And there was a group called the World Association of Parliamentarians for World Government, and they developed a map showing what nations' military forces would be policing what other nations when the world government finally would become a reality. And according to this map, now remember, this is 1952, American forces would be policing the Caspian region, that's where Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, all of those are. And on September 14th of 1997, sure enough, American military, that's that same year, remember now, Armitage, Brzezinski's book, that same year, September 14th, American military forces did indeed begin conducting joint military exercises there, and of course we have military bases there. The point is, in 1952, the Soviet Union isn't declining, it's coming up. They've got a nuclear bomb, in a few years they're ahead of us with Sputnik and so on. So why would anybody in 1952 imagine that we're going to have our military forces and bases over there in what's part of the Soviet Empire, unless it's all part of a plan?
Yeah, well, I remember so well back in 1979 when the American CIA toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And I remember thinking at that time, why are we deposing a man? Certainly he's a despot, but at least he's friendly to the United States and he's an enlightened despot and he has helped the people a great deal. Why are we getting rid of him and bringing in people who hate us, bringing in the Ayatollah Khomeini and the other Ayatollahs? Why, this just doesn't make sense. And in 1979, it doesn't make any sense. In the year 2005 or 2004, it makes a lot of sense. Why, once again, we've done it. We've created the best enemy that the American tax dollars can buy. And right now we're talking about going to war with Iran, that we put the people into power there. This is what's so incredible. But it's tragic that most people have a very, very short memories.
That's true. And to pick up on the power elite sort of vehicle at this moment, the rumor is that Richard Armitage may be replaced as Deputy Secretary of State by John Bolton. And both of those people, along with Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz, as well as others, have been members of PNAC, that Project for the New American Century, which on Nightline of March 5 of 2003, there was an interview. Ted Koppel was interviewing this Professor Ian Lustig of the University of Pennsylvania. And Lustig just frankly said, and Koppel didn't argue with him, he says, this group, PNAC, is now, quote, in control of the White House, end quote. And what this group had done, they were organized some years ago, back during the Clinton years, and on January 26th of 1998, one particular letter was signed by Armitage, Bolton, Wolfowitz, and many others, and basically that was arguing that Bill Clinton get rid of Saddam Hussein. This was extremely important, and so when the attacks of 9/11 occurred, immediately Don Rumsfeld, who's part of this effort, was saying, can you get information? He was talking to his underlings, quick, get some information so we can tie this to Saddam Hussein. And shortly thereafter, on the 15th, just 4 days later, all of the prime people of the government and defense and State Department, CIA and so forth, had a meeting at Camp David, just west of the White House. And at that meeting, Wolfowitz was arguing vigorously for attacking Iraq. And according to the London Times article about it, it reported that Wolfowitz, quote, argued that September 11 provided a perfect pretext to hit Baghdad, end quote. And so that's what's important about this, that these plans go back many years. And now what I don't have in this article I did, but I'll digress a little because it's important for you to see how this works. PNAC doesn't just happen. PNAC is more or less invented by William Kristol, who's the head of PNAC, and he gets together his friends, Armitage, Bolton, Wolfowitz, all of these people. He gets them together. Now, that raises the question, well, who's William Kristol? Well, he's editor of the Weekly Standard. So what? You know, a relatively small conservative magazine coming out of Washington. Well, you have to backtrack on this. William Kristol is where he is by, in my opinion, a long-range plan, and I'll just go quickly backwards. Kristol was in the position that he was to get funding from Rupert Murdoch because, for his magazine, basically because he had been Dan Quayle's chief of staff. He was Dan Quayle's chief of staff, back during the, previous President Bush administration because he had been chief of staff for William Bennett at the Department of Education where I was. And he was a real piece of work back there when I was there. And he got that position because Bennett had been head of the National Endowment for the Humanities before he became secretary and then brought Bill Kristol up as his chief of staff. Bennett got that National Endowment job with a very, very, very nasty fight that was going on between the neocons and a Mel Bradford, who's, as they call him, a paleocon out of Texas. The old-fashioned traditional conservatives wanted Mel Bradford for that position, but Bill Kristol's father, Irving Kristol, and that whole commentary magazine crowd was really pushing in a very vigorous fight to get Bennett in that position. Bennett was in that position because he had been right down the road from me, you mentioned I'm in Raleigh, at the National Humanities Center, which is located between NC State University, UNC, and Duke University, sort of a triangle here. And Bennett was second in command to a Charles Frankel there, who was on the board of the Humanist magazine, and who suddenly got assassinated in his house up in New York. He and his wife got, you know, assassinated. And Bennett had been promoted by the commentary magazine people from practically oblivion, and they made him what he was, so eventually he could bring Bill Kristol to Washington, and the story goes from there.
All right, fine. Well, it's fascinating to begin all the interconnections. Bill Kristol, the great Christian leader, who finds out blew $8 million in... he wrote the Book of Virtues. He read, what was it, $8 million in gambling? Yeah. He blew something ridiculous like that. And this is the man who's preaching values to the Christian population. I've heard him speak to standing ovation crowds. This is the sort of leaders we got, ladies and gentlemen, of the conservative Christian movement in real trouble in America today.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-MOR.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
And I want to mention that we do carry the Big Berkey and the Berkey Life water filters, and if you don't have one, you certainly should. There's new legislation requiring them to fluoridate all water in California, and believe me, fluoride is a terrible toxin. It decreases pregnancy, it has an impact on your mind and on learning, it produces cancer, it softens the bones, it creates hypothyroidism, it produces dental fluorosis, it attacks the endocrine system, it lowers the testosterone levels, lower sperm motility, and they want to put it in our water. Well, you can get it out, whether a Big Berkey or a Berkey Life water filter. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You'll have to have the PF4 or the PF2 water filter, special fillers, but it'll do the job for you. Give us a call today.
This is Health.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And, of course, he's taking us into the Mr. Richard Armitage. And this is going along with an article that Dennis has written that goes into the background of Mr. Armitage. And it's up on newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. You really should be on the list and get those articles every day. Many of them are fascinating, especially those written by Dr. Dennis Kelly. So pick up the story there, Dennis.
Okay, well, briefly, let me take about 30 seconds to finish up the point just before so that people see how this evolves. The neocon
This
founder,
is health journalist Bill Sardi.
Irving Kristol, I believe, my opinion is, had a plan to get William Bennett in a strategic position. So they placed him with Charles Frankel at this National Humanities Center, and then either as the head of that eventually or as his assistant, which Bennett was, he would move up, and then there was a robbery, and the Frankels were killed, and so Bennett moved up, and then from there to Washington, so that Bill Kristol, Irving Kristol's son, could eventually be where he is today. All right, picking up on Armitage now, returning to the IFI connection with Armitage, in May of 2001, Armitage and CIA Director George Tenet had what was characterized as an unusually long meeting in Islamabad, Pakistan, with the head of the ISI, whose name was a General Mahmoud Ahmad, and also with Pakistan's chief executive, who's a General Pervez Musharraf. And a few weeks later, after that, mid-July, in Berlin, in 2001, there was this UN-sponsored international contact group meeting on Afghanistan. Now, the Taliban wasn't there, but basically, the Pakistanis had been ISI supporters and actually created the Taliban. And so the Pakistani representative at this meeting was a foreign secretary named Niaz Naik. And basically what he came out of that was having the impression that the U.S. representatives demanded certain things regarding Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda from the Taliban so they would face military action. And so, moving ahead a few weeks later, we move up to September 10th, just the day before the attacks. And at the same time that Armitage is meeting with Sir David Manning, who's the National Security Advisor of Tony Blair, the British Prime Minister, who's also a Vice President of Socialist International and who is sort of rumored to be the future head of the European Union. On that date, September 10th, when Armitage is having that meeting, the Pakistan daily newspaper known as The News reported that General Ahmad was in Washington at that very time and had been meeting some top officials at the Pentagon, CIA, and National Security Council. So basically what I'm asking is a question. Was it a coincidence that on that same day of the 10th, some top Pentagon officials suddenly canceled their travel plans for the next morning, not the next week, not the next afternoon, the next morning, apparently because of security concerns? And that was a story in Newsweek. And so I asked then, what did General Ahmad tell some of these top Pentagon officials before September 11th? And did it have anything to do with the fact that the same General Ahmad had previously had a person named Saeed Sheikh? This is the fellow who is convicted of kidnapping and killing Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. Did it have anything to do with the same General Ahmad wiring $100,000 to the 9/11 terrorist leader Mohammed Atta? So those are two very important questions. Was the coincidence that he was there just before then when these top Pentagon officials suddenly canceled their travel plans? And what did it have to do, if anything, with the fact that the same general had this 100,000 wired to the terrorist leader.
And this is up on the Internet. It's been around really going back 2 or 3 years about General Ahmad actually wiring money to Mohammed Atta.
Right.
It was picked up by the Indian news services, by several other news services, pretty well blocked out here in America through our controlled media because, of course, General Ahmad is meeting that morning with all sorts of key people in our government, the leaders of the Senate and the House and the Intelligence Committee. And you wonder why he would be here if he had been wiring money to Mohammed Atta. He must have known what was going to happen.
Right. On that morning, General Ahmad was having breakfast with, among other people, Porter Goss, who was a member of Yale University's secret society called Book and Snake.
And he is today the new director of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Right, appointed by George W. Bush, who was a member of Yale's secret Skull and Bone Society. And I hear the music.
There we are. And, of course, what people have forgotten is that Porter Goss was a longtime member of the CIA who gets out of the CIA and miraculously gets elected to Congress and miraculously becomes head of the Congressional Oversight Committee overseeing the CIA. And then, of course, he leaves that position to become the director of the CIA. Almost sounds like the like the fox is watching the hen house, counting the hens.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 on the route down off the eastern coast a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts, entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV or order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working with the Oklahoma City bombing. And this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book anywhere that will give you a more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV or now.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking about Richard Armitage. We're talking about General Ahmad. And, of course, here's the man who is the head of the Pakistani ISI, their counterpart of the CIA. He's funneling money into a Mohammedana, and we actually have copies of that article if anybody's interested in seeing it out of the India Times. And then, of course, amazingly, on the very morning of the 9/11 attack, he is talking with the head of the House Judiciary, I should say, Oversight Committee, a man named Porter Goss, who, of course, leaves Congress to become the new director of the CIA, although he had always been a part of the secret world of the CIA. So you begin to see all of these things fitting together. Pick up the story then, please, Dennis.
Okay. Porter Goss had been at Yale and a secret society just like George W. Bush had been. He had been, before that, part of the infamous Operation 40, as it's called, with the CIA having to do with the Barry Seal and that whole story. And so now he's President Bush's nominee to be head of the CIA currently, and that's who General Ahmad is meeting with on the morning of 9/11. Now, on the afternoon of 9/11, as well as on the 12th and the 13th, General Ahmad is meeting with Richard Armitage, our key player in all of this, for the 3 straight days. So General Mott, as I said earlier, not only was the individual who was meeting with these people but had wired the head, Saeed Sheikh, individual by that name, wire $100,000 to Muhammad Atta. And so it's useful to look at who this Saeed Sheikh is. This fellow had studied for quite some time at the Fabian Socialist London School of Economics. And on February 5, since Daniel Pearl had been killed, the Wall Street Journal reporter over there, he knew that the Pakistani authorities were looking for him for that kidnapping and murder. And so on February 5 of 2002, he voluntarily surrendered. Now, what they did with him was interesting. They take him pretty much right away to Rawalpindi. Well, you know, why are you taking this fellow to Rawalpindi? I mean, why not Karachi or, you know, Islamabad or somewhere?
Well, what is Rawalpindi? I don't even know that.
It's a town, a city, but the reason I'm mentioning it, rather than, you know, Islamabad or Karachi, you know, a capital, why not Islamabad? But no, they don't take him there. They take him to Rawalpindi, and the reason is, that is where General Ahmad went into seclusion after his situation got a little too hot there in Pakistan after 9/11, and we had determined that he had that 100,000 wired. Now, you know, he wasn't tortured or anything. He just goes into seclusion nice and safely. Well, that also happens to be Rawalpindi, where his ally, another general, Muhammad Aziz Khan, had lived as well. And Khan had been with the ISI for quite some time and is currently with he's the Pakistani leader, General Musharraf's Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman. That's the most powerful military position there outside of General Musharraf himself. And General Khan there had hosted parties many, many times where this fellow Saeed Sheikh had frequently been in attendance, at least prior to October 8th of 2000. Now, the reason he was taken there, Saeed Sheikh, was taken to Rawalpindi, was so that General Khan there, also where General Ahmad was, could try and convince Sheikh not to reveal the ISI bin Laden connection. That's the most likely reason they took him there. And you have to remember also that General Khan is the one who had helped Osama bin Laden get his dialysis treatment when he needed it. He helped the Taliban and Al-Qaeda relocate in safe sanctuaries in Pakistan after the U.S. had attacked the Taliban. So it's a very cozy relationship there. And the questions from that immediately arise, just like I raised some questions earlier, the questions that arise from this is, how come Saeed Sheikh was never charged for his alleged involvement with the attacks of 9/11? I mean, he's wiring $100,000 to Muhammad Atta. And secondly, why did the U.S. not request his extradition for the murder of Daniel Pearl, who was investigating the ISI-Al-Qaeda connection? And so I basically answer my own question with another question by saying, oh, could it be because this fellow Saeed Sheikh would have exposed the link between General Musharraf, the ISI, and bin Laden? And just recently, to put a little icing on this, November 27th, just a few days ago, General Musharraf's military spokesman, a Major General Shaukat Sultan, announced that they, the Pakistanis, were pulling their forces who had been searching for Osama and other members of Al-Qaeda away from the checkpoints and some other positions along the border with Afghanistan, which is where he's supposed to be hiding out. They were going to take their troops out of there, and they would no longer be searching for specifically for him and the members of Al-Qaeda there. You know, they say, well, we've looked around, and, you know, that's it, and that's the end of that story.
Do you ever have a feeling we're not trying very hard to get hold of Osama bin Laden, that we almost need him as this enemy out here? And I'm sure you probably read the text of his latest missile that came in just a couple of days before the election, and it almost appeared that he was doing everything he could to get George Bush elected. In fact, he talked about the fact that we'd lost 1,000 casualties and they'd lost 15,000 Iraqis. Whereas the figure is actually 100,000, so why did he use the official CIA figures rather than the Iraqi figures, the ones that they're using? And why was he talking about George Bush reading the book about the goat on the morning of 9/11? It sounds like he'd read Michael Moore's film or whoever wrote the script for that. In fact, you begin to wonder, how do we know it was Osama bin Laden? Why the CIA tells us it was.
That's right. And, once a CIA asset, maybe always a CIA asset. So like Osama was a CIA asset back in the 1980s when we were helping him train his people to fight as insurgents. We didn't call them terrorists at the time, as insurgents against the Soviets who had invaded Afghanistan. And just like Saddam Hussein had been a CIA asset, part of a six-member assassination team back in the late 1950s. CIA has its fingers in many, many places. As we've talked about before, they gave Alan Dulles, who was head of it back in the early 50s, gave a $10 million slush fund to General Norman Schwarzkopf's father to help train people to overthrow the government of Iran at that time in 53 because they had nationalized their oil, and we didn't like that too much. So the CIA has been involved in a lot of that. But picking up on what you just said about this video, back in the spring of 2004, I'd written one of my articles saying there could be a surprise from Osama just before the election here, and sure enough, as you indicated, just a few weeks before the election, the November vote, he released this videotape, and as you said, he's using the CIA's figures regarding Iraqi insurgents, casualties, and deaths. And what he did on this that got a lot of attention was a warning on this videotape, and the warning said, quote, "Your security is not in the hands of Kerry or Bush or Al-Qaeda. Your security is in your own hands, and any U.S. state that does not toy with our security automatically guarantees its own security," end quote. And when I saw that, I said, well, no, wait a minute, that doesn't sound logical. I mean, he's saying our security doesn't depend on Al-Qaeda. Well, sure it does. I mean, he's head of Al-Qaeda. If he says Al-Qaeda is going to do something affecting our security, then, that's what happens. And also, he can't be so stupid as to think individual states have anything they can do or not do. I mean, it's not like Nebraska can secede from the Union because they love, Osama bin Laden or something. It's the national government which would declare war, not war, whatever. And so I just didn't think that made any sense unless it was a coded message. And perhaps Osama, he was actually doing was signaling his agents in various U.S. states to wait until after the election, and then regardless of who won, they should not wait for a directive specifically from him, Osama himself, before striking at previously determined place, time, or occasion. That's the only way that sort of warning seemed to make sense. And then what I do towards the end of the article on newswithviews.com is say in general about this, the power elite who is behind a lot of things that have been going on. And I say to people who may be skeptical about that or unaware of their existence that this has a real track history. It's not just the power elite, the title of a book by C. Wright Mills back in the 1950s, a Columbia University professor. But others as well have talked about this, and one particular example I give is a professor, Suzanne Keller, in her 1963 book called Ruling Class, Beyond the Ruling Class, Strategic Elites in Modern Society. See, what she's saying there is, there's a ruling class, and then there's beyond the ruling class, this really special elite, strategic elites in the modern society. And the quote I pulled from that book was, quote, "The notion of a stratum elevated above the mass of men may prompt approval, indifference, or despair, but regardless of how men feel about it, the fact remains that their lives, fortunes, and fate are and have long been dependent on what a small number of men in high places think and do," end quote. And so after that, I give a specific example of how this relates to today and how a lot of people are enamored of Arnold Schwarzenegger becoming the governor of California. And what I do is show that this is representative, his attitude of this type of power elite, because in U.S. News and World Report some years ago, he said, quote, "My relationship to power and authority is that I'm all for it. People need somebody to watch over them. 95% of the people in the world need to be told what to do and how to behave," end quote.
I think they call that fascism, don't they?
At least, among other things.
Well, his daddy was a member of the Nazi party, but he was a good Nazi, we're told, so that's all right.
Okay, I guess that's like Kurt Waldheim, head of the UN. He was a good one, too, I guess. And Arnold likes him. I mean, Arnold's real good friends with that former UN Secretary General, Kurt Waldheim. I've gone into before, I won't go into it much now, but basically there was a Nazi plan that was hatched early in the war. I mean, the ordinary view of all this is, well, you know, here they are, they invade Poland, here's this military conflict, you got the battle of this and that in Normandy and so forth, and they find Hitler dead in a bunker, and that's that, you know, that sort of thing. But that's really not the only thing they were doing. In other words, let's say you're going into a war, and you really think you're superior, and you really have a military opportunity to prevail. And there's a lot of times, you know, when if the Germans had done one thing rather than another, they may have actually come out on top of that war. It's, you know, it was sort of a nip and tuck there for a while. And so you have to ask yourself, why early in the war? I mean, late in the war, you understand, but why early in the war would they develop this plan that basically had them losing? I mean, the plan wasn't we're going to lose, but the plan was that what they would do in 1940-41 was they would prepare members of the German general staff to go underground, go to one country and then another country. Let's say they would go to Holland and then to Canada, or, you know, to Denmark and then the U.S. or whatever. Two successive countries, so you couldn't track them back. And what they would do is infiltrate various aspects of society. Let's say our banking industry, chambers of commerce, and so forth. And this is early, this is 1940-41, you know, way before they know they're going to militarily lose. And so what they would do in these cases is in two generations, not one, but two generations, that'd be around, say, in the 1990s, they would have significant numbers in high-level positions. You know, you may have to infiltrate low, but then by, you know, two generations down the line, you or, you know, somebody you had prepared would rank, you know, be president of the XYZ bank or something like that. And the plan was, and I detail it in some of my books, it comes from a book called The Time for Decision by Sumner Wells, who's a very high-ranking over in Europe, member of the American government at the time, is a CFR person, and he it's in Chapter 9 of that book where he's explaining the plan, but he says a lot of the plan will remain hidden. But I'm going to tell you some of it, Sumner Wells says. And he shows how they, you know, try and make the people of a country, let's say the U.S., turn off of our politicians, distrust them, and then they would have be infiltrated in key positions where they could implement this sort of fascistic future through, you know, education and business and so on. And at the appropriate time, starting in the 1990s, their ultimate plan would come to fulfillment. And so that's why I brought up this whole thing, because I mentioned Kurt Waldheim, of course, became Secretary General of the UN, having been a former Nazi. But also another example was another fellow named Paul Dickoff, early on in 1941, did this sort of two-country bit, and eventually around 1970, for a period of years, wound up as head of Interpol. And the reason I mention that is Interpol is a very important strategic position internationally where you can keep tabs on everybody, you know, their criminal records, their comings and goings, you know, who's doing what and so on. So this seems to be going along. And then I pick up toward the end of my article about if they want to do what Arnold says, you know, tell people what to do and how to behave, of course, you've got to be able to track the people. And so I just give several recent examples. October 7th, there's a WorldNet Daily column that's titled "Feds Plan to Track Every Car." And this is talking about a report concerning a little-known federal entity called the Intelligent Transportation Systems Joint Program Office. And they have this plan to use global positioning satellites to track every movement of every vehicle in the country. They'll have these onboard units in the cars. First models will be in spring of 2005, but by 10 years later, they'll be in, you know, all the vehicles. I mean, 57 million vehicles around the country, so they'll be able to track everything you do in your car. And then a few days after that, October 13th, the Food and Drug Administration approved an implantable computer chip for hospital patients that would contain all of your medical details. So there, you got your little implantable chip now. And then over in a few days after that, just about a week ago, the London Times on November 24th published an article saying that British Prime Minister Tony Blair backed compulsory IDs for all of the people of Britain. In other words, you won't be able to get public health care, passports, whatever, by the year 2010 to 2012. You'll have to have this national ID, which of course will be a number, you know, as your identification number. And at this point, somebody may be listening to the program and saying, well, you know, that's the British. You know, they're socialist anyway. But Americans, we would never submit to a national ID card. But then the question I would ask you, the listener, is, well, would you have ever thought that Americans would allow the U.S. Senate to say that parents do not have to give their permission before their children receive a mental health screening? I mean, that's you just wouldn't think that the Senate would say, no, we don't have to have parents give permission. We can just screen their children anyway.
Well, of course, the philosophy is that children belong to the state.
Right.
Everything belongs to the state. And as Arnold Schwarzenegger said, most people really aren't capable of looking after themselves. They've got to be looked after by someone else. That's what that's really all about as we move from freedom to fascism. Dennis, we're out of town. God bless you. Out of time. God bless you. Okay. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye. And we have all of Dr. Dennis Kelly's books right here at Radio Liberty. Now is the Dawning of the Road to Socialism. His book, Secret Records Revealed, one of my favorites.
We have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, what really happened.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. The video we were just talking about is entitled Cover Up in Oklahoma City. That's Cover Up in Oklahoma City. We recommend that to you. We actually have a couple of four tape sets on Oklahoma City. We have certainly a couple of videos on that. And it's such an important issue. What people do not understand is what Timothy McVeigh told his sister. And that was that he worked for a secret special forces force that was involved in illegal activity. And that's how the defense opened its defense of Timothy McVeigh, and not a word of it in the controlled media. Now, if you'd like the pages out of the book written by the lawyer, Stephen Jones, who defended Timothy McVeigh, the book is entitled Others Unknown, the Oklahoma City Conspiracy, or the And we actually have the pages. We'll get them for you. But there's no question that Timothy McVeigh had told several people that he was working for special forces involved in criminal activity. How could they keep that out of the media all across America? Why, very simply, they control the media. If you don't believe that, you need to get the book we carry entitled The Media Monopoly. So let me suggest you consider getting, number one, the video, Cover Up in Oklahoma City, or better still, the Oklahoma City special, which involves 2 4 tape sets and 2 videos, worth about $80, $90, and you get it for $69.95. And then, of course, that you give serious consideration to getting the book, The New Media Monopoly. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, because America truly is under attack today. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our values, our freedom, our future are under attack. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when we have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you believe in what we're doing, if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty team, quite frankly, we could use your help. because we're drawing to the end of the year, and we of course would like to end up the year certainly even, and we're not going to be able to without your help and support. So if you believe in Radio Liberty, if you believe we're giving you the information you're not going to get elsewhere, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or simply subscribe to our newsletter. Now, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which is the October newsletter, which goes into the background of the First Bank of the United States and the Second Bank of the United States and how the central bankers of the world work in concert. And, of course, they work with their good friend, Alexander Hamilton, and their good friend Nicholas Biddle, who headed the Second Bank of the United States. And you'd like, of course, to get a background of what we're talking about and that wonderful story of one of the greatest heroes of America, a man named Andrew Jackson, Old Hickory, a man who was really beloved by the people of his time because he had the courage to speak up against the Second Bank of the United States and the international financiers who, even at that time, people recognized ruled the world. So they would be glad to send you a free copy of our October newsletter. You'll have to ask for that specially. Again, the number 1-800-544-8927. To understand the real danger that faces us today, you need to get our 4 tape sets on water fluoridation. Do you realize that if you drink water, fluoridated water for any period of time, it begins to affect your brain permanently? Do you realize it lowers testosterone level, lowers sperm motility, lowers fertility rates, increases fracture rate? This creates all sorts of endocrine problems in your body, and you're never going to hear this. And we've already fluoridated over 67% of the communities in America. Europe won't allow this at all. In fact, it was used for a time in Northern Ireland in the communities that were opposing British rule. And even Great Britain now has stopped fluoridating those areas. But other than the city of Basel, that was the only places in Europe, Western Europe, that had fluoridated water. Basel now has stopped fluoridating its water after 40 years. That leaves just two small areas in Spain. And all the rest of the people over there, why, they understand this is a poison. And they're poisoning our people, they're poisoning our children, they're increasing the incidence of Down syndrome, and you'll certainly want to get the documentation of everything I say. Much of this is covered in a 4-tape set on fluoride. We have two great books. One is The Fluoride Deception by Chris Bryson. The other is Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, or The Fluoride Deception. We hope you'll want to get both of them. And then, of course, the 4-tape set on fluoride. You'll want to get our 4-tape set on aspartame and certainly on MSG, because these are excitotoxins. They're toxic to the brain. Basically, NutraSweet is made up of methanol. Aspartic acid, which is a poison, methanol, makes you blind. And of course, phenylalanine, and of course, if you get much of that, why, it poisons your brain. So why are we putting it in our food across America? Why, to poison our children, to create an epidemic of obesity, to affect the mind. It lowers fertility, it lowers testosterone. Ah, shucks, didn't you know these things? Well, the reason you don't is because they control the media. So you want to get our 4-tape set on aspartame, our 4-tape set on mercury. You want to help us inform the American people about what's really going on. And while we're watching the tragedy of unfolding in Iraq, we're being poisoned here in America today. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the items we've mentioned, the books, the 4-tape sets, or get a free catalog, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.